Okay, here we go. podcast 15, and I've been trying to run it up to the election here. This is Mostly Hairless Apes, Dr. Gene Mesko coming at you from the 14th Congressional District in the U.S., waiting on what everyone is calling a monumental election. Kamala Harris versus Donald J. Trump, the orange parasite, as I like to think of him, because Trump falls into the category of an amazing sociopath based on the Bible, based on a rule of ethics, based on biology that I've come up with. That's me. Obviously not a very well person. But I have an idea that if we adhered to the Church of Science, if we said, oh, wait a minute, let's make as few assumptions as possible. Let's use science as the primary belief system, that these things that we can observe and experiment and measure with the natural world, and we only use consistent explanations that fit in with all of the rules and laws and theories that we've come up with in science, we could actually make the world a little bit better. And what that involves, unfortunately, is downgrading everybody's belief in magical deities. And obviously that's the problem. There's some serious social inertia going on with magical deities. They've been around for literally millennia. We've had these concepts of Jesus and Allah and all these other deities that are out there. Well, the monotheistic ones are the big ones, because in the model of evolution that uses information embedded in brains, and we make decisions, once again, making that big assumption that we have free will and that we can actually think rationally occasionally and come up with new ideas, and we can interpret reality and understand it. But we've always had ignorance in there as well. And so we've always filled in the gaps. And the gods of the gaps are in there. That's where the gods exist. The gods exist in the gaps in our knowledge. Talk to any good atheist and they'll tell you about the god of the gaps. Because if somebody says, oh, I can't explain that, oh, it must be God did it. And that's a perfectly reasonable explanation as to why gods have persisted for so long. Because as opposed to wasting my time not living, not surviving and reproducing, and pondering the imponderables, what's going on until I have more knowledge, we end up with civilizations that follow some basic rules. Because that's how civilizations survive. Civilizations survive by congealing ideas that accommodate biology. You always have to deal with natural selection, but artificial selection in human civilizations with beings with consciousness, third order information processing there, in case you're not keeping up. First order information is just nature. Chemistry and physics give us basic laws of interactions, gravity, electromagnetism. And we've got those down to three, along with nuclear forces. And physicists would like to come up with a grand unified field theorem, the theory of everything. That's for the physicists to work out. But within biology, we get it. Biology uses chemistry and physics. And biological systems are second-order information systems because they're secondary in that they've separated the information coding for a pattern of matter and energy. Because in chemical systems that are evolving, that just react. The information is intrinsic to the function and structures. How electrons are orbiting, all those subatomic particles. That's information tied to structure and function. And they're the same thing. But what biology did is biology built a buffer. That's how we can stay alive for any length of time. We build a buffer for entropy by isolating information from the matter and energy that does the structure and function. We build different information molecules. It was probably RNA first, and then DNA. And then we got proteins to go out and do all the tools. And then we evolved consciousness. We got third order. Not only do we have genetic information that we can manipulate now, but we have mental information. And that mental information is what gives us artificial selection. It allows us to isolate ideas, and they're packaged as civilizations. And civilizations consist of three main subsets of information. We have our belief system, which tells us how the universe works, and then we build our rules, our ethics, from those ethical standards. And then we build an economy to interact with the natural world and distribute resources. And those civilizations have shifted in over the years, and we've had so many civilizations. And we're trying to build a global civilization. We really are. Because I think everybody would like to have enough resources. And that's really the choice we have to make right now. And I think we might be getting there. We're going to have to wait another 2 weeks, I think, broadcasting on October 18th. We got to get to November 5th, and then we'll figure out what's going on. But the idea that we should decide which persons get resources and that some people get more based on force, that's the path to Mad Max world. That's what the orange parasite is breeding. That's what his buddy Mr. Hillbilly Elegy is breeding. They want enough anger and enough hate to say, no, we're not one species. We don't live on just one planet, and we're entitled to more stuff than you are. That's the deal. That's the big decision we have to make. And we'll find out how that plays out in a few weeks. I think enough Americans have stepped back and said, wow, we've really got this going on. That we do live on one planet, we're polluting the crap out of it, and we have to figure out some way to do this. And it's going to be really hard to step away from gods, though, because to appreciate science in all of its technical glory is to have to spend a fair amount of mental energy to study and learn and at least have a grasp of how physics works and how chemistry works and how biology works and how psychology works and how sociology works and how we have mathematical tools to interpret these things. We can do experiments, we can get data, and we can build theories that say, hey, humans react emotionally to stuff, but we can react intellectually too. And whatever intellect and consciousness is, it's probably not from a magical entity. It may very well be. There may be afterlife. We don't know. But to keep arguing and killing each other over all of this religious nonsense on top of, which is really just a ruse, because the people in power like having power, and they're going to keep hoarding up resources and getting us to fight each other, to get the masses to fight each other and be distracted by mass media. And in reality, the thing that's going to kill us is if we allow these big entities to isolate resources for themselves. This is really what's going on. We have corporations, we have nation states, we have business enterprises, we have all these places, and we just need to cap it. That's just the deal in the 21st century. We have to appreciate that what science teaches us are that there are boundaries, there are limits. There are limits to our knowledge. We only understand so much. There are limits to the ecological flow of resources. Study a little ecology and bring in the physics and the chemistry and the biology and understand that matter and energy flow through an ecosystem and that they have to, just like they flow through our bodies. We have to eat, we have to sleep, we have to meet certain physiological needs. And unless you meet those physiological needs, you die. And we have to develop humans with certain rules. There's always limits. And there's limits to how much pollution can be handled in an ecosystem. And there's limits to how many minerals there are in the ground. And there's limits to how much heat we can retain in the atmosphere before we change weather patterns. And there are limits. And so that's the problem. That's the main psychological problem with deities. Deities allow us to ponder the infinite. We could live forever in heaven with God. I was taught that as a child. And I'm sure many other people are told variations of that. And the idea of infinity contradicts the idea of limits. And that's what nobody likes about science. That's what really people don't want to do the math. That's why there's a joke in American society. Because America, as a young nation, you have to consider us as a youthful nation. And what's happened during our evolutionary history is we didn't think there were limits. Americans said, there's this amazing wilderness. We get to take over land. We can have a land rush and a gold rush. If you get there sooner, you take the sooner schooner out to Oklahoma, and you can just lay claim to some dirt, and you can have your own space. Because what evolved in the old world, in Europe and Asia, in the colonial era, everybody realized, oh, the only people who really have power, who really have freedom, are the people at the top who have access to all the resources that funnel up to them. And that's who we threw out in the 20th century. In the 20th century, we threw out all the dictators. We said, you guys are done. We don't want kings. We don't want overlords. We don't want popes. That's why we broke down all those institutions. And that happened because of the Enlightenment, of the Industrial Revolution, where we figured out ways to distribute enough information so that most of us understood we could make a living. And we branched away from monarchs, and we threw them out. We got rid of dictators. And now we're running into a problem because we have a big system to manage. And people are saying, oh, we can manage this if I'm on top. And no, what we have to do is let everybody manage their own affairs. And we have to cut down the big dogs. We have to cap capitalism. That's really where we're going today. That the idea that capitalism is a useful economic system is a good thing. Capitalism embodies one of the two main processes of evolution. Because when you evolve living systems, as I've talked about before, they capture information. They store information, and they have access to that information, and they use the information to manipulate matter and energy to stay alive, survive and reproduce, and win the game of natural selection. That's what biology tells us. And when we extend that to artificial selection, we say, well, how do we do that with a civilization, with a group of humans who are consciously aware, who can think and can work? Well, we have to come up with rules that say, how do we behave? And we say, well, if we embrace capitalism, if we embrace our economic system as the primary driving force, that path just leads us back to biology. It just loops back to the natural world. Because ultimately, as we've filled up the planet and we've laid claim to every decent piece of real estate out there, what we've ended up with is people on the top who have a lot and can manipulate things, and people on the bottom who don't have as much. And that's really the message here. We can either cap capitalism, or we can cap the rules, because that's really where we are. We're at a point where the three major social adaptations we use for civilization are conflicting. I think we've agreed, actually. We agree on two of them. If you ask most modern humans who live in anything like an industrialized world, they would say, I'd like to be free enough to make my own decisions. I'd like to have enough resources to at least manage my life, have a comfortable life, raise my kids, just get by, and maybe work on something that I think is important. That, I think, would make most people happy. But how do you do that? Well, you got to have a home. You got to have a decent job. You got to have an income stream. You got to be able to have access to some resources. That's really what wealth is access to resources. And that's what the economy is supposed to do. But the economy has an aneurysm. It has this fallacy of free market capitalism, of laissez-faire capitalism, that says we can allow individuals to access this global economy that we have now. And they can manipulate markets and buy things and sell things and harvest their profits. Here's one that hit me the other day. just looking for discounts always. You know, you're always trying to save a buck. And the phone services have been changing. They've been evolving systems. They've become a social utility. Everybody needs to be connected in our modern world. If you don't have a job, you got to have a phone. You got to be able to contact people. The landlines are going away. We're building these cellular networks. And they cost money. And sure, we got to pay for them. It works. But it used to be on one, which they're all pretty similar, but one of the bigger companies starts with a V. We won't name names. But they had opened up, they've opened up a new service where there, what used to be a $70 a month fee that I had for a service. And I switched to somebody who said, hey, I will give it to you for $25 a month. And now Verizon has a $25 a buck network, a $25 a month network. And what that boiled down to was they saw that they were losing customers. And they said, oh, we can offer this too. We don't have to take the obscene profits that allow us to shell out for sports stadiums and advertising and all the other crap that we do and CEO pay. We could actually run it on a cheaper network and we could get some customers doing that. But there's no incentive to do that because there's a stronger incentive to suck up more money, to be as greedy as possible and make as much money as possible and distribute it and build up corporate shares and build more stuff for everybody at the top of those pyramids. And that's what we have to cap. That's the capping of capitalism. If we capped capitalism, we said, hey, how much does anybody need? $10 million? $100 million? One home, two homes, three homes, a whole bunch of property? I think as a minor start, as a suggestion, I would say, does anybody need anything more than two homes? We'll give you one home. We'll give you a vacation home somewhere. You can build an estate, sure. And you can have money. I mean, you want to make money. We want competition. Competition and cooperation are the two evolutionary tools we have to work with. You know, they run it because that's really what determines selection. When we're selecting for systems, we're selecting for survival and reproduction of either an organism or a civilization. The ones that are more efficient, the ones that use their resources better, the one that can store more information and apply it to problems, the one that can solve problems better, those are the ones that are going to survive. That's evolutionary fitness. And civilizations do that by competing with different forms of economies to distribute resources, different governments to manage people's behavior, and belief systems that provide the rationale to do those things, to support those rules. Because that's the real problem with a civilization. We have to have the same belief system. Belief systems are the anchors for any given civilization, because ultimately we run into ignorance. Ultimately we don't have complete knowledge. And because we don't have complete knowledge and we have to make decisions, we gather whatever information we can. And information that can be verified is knowledge. Knowledge is validated. In science, it's the data that we get from experiments. And then we project it out into a model of the universe. And we say, how do these things fit together? Why would it work this way? Well, evolution is one of those answers we get. You know, physics and chemistry are some of those answers we get. And we make laws. In biology, we have theories just like physics and chemistry. Physics and chemistry have gravity and electromagnetism and atomic orbital theories that explain how things work. And we can do all this amazing chemistry and physical movement and control of energy with physics and chemistry. And in biology, we understand we have theories about cells and DNA and evolution. And we have all these rules that say, oh, this is a consistent pattern that we see. Everything that's alive is made of at least one cell. It has DNA at its core. And this is what makes systems work. And so when we adhere to those rules, when we say that's our belief system, we think science has been revealing an accurate view of the world. Do we have all the information? No. But we have a lot. We have a lot of information that can be qualified as knowledge when you accept science as your belief system. And this is, I guess, where I'm coming at this from, because gearing up towards retirement as a biology professor, having taught mostly in the public sector for most of my adult life, had my stint with research in the private sector and going to school. But if I hear one more student say, well, I don't think evolution's real, or I don't think that's real because that's just, that's science, but I don't accept it. And I just want to go, well, what world do you live in? What magical world do you live in that you think science is irrelevant, that science just doesn't accurately represent the world? And they use their cell phones and they get on planes and they drive cars that are all based on scientific principles. But to have something like evolution come into play and to question their belief in a deity, that's where we can get the power to realize that infinity might be a thing. And maybe we do live forever, but all we can manage, the only thing we should focus on as a civilization, is how do we manage our resources and create rules to make people behave. And when we do that on Earth, we have to incorporate limits. Because we understand from physics and chemistry and biology that there are limits. Everybody's going to die. Everybody needs a certain amount of nutrition. Everybody needs a decent home and has resources to be able to think rationally. If you don't have that's what they don't want. This is what you need to appreciate from the citizen standpoint in a reasonable civilization. People in charge, people who have excess power, people who I would cap in terms of capitalism. Capping can mean whatever you want. At this point, I'm not talking about mafiosa kneecapping. I'm not talking about putting a cap in their arse. I'm just saying a limit. There needs to be a limit to how much everybody has, how much power everybody has. That's the beauty of the American system with the separation of powers. They realized this. The founders realized power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. They read their Machiavelli. What that means for us from a civilization standpoint is we have to put a cap on everything. We put a cap on power. We put term limits on people. But we don't cap capitalism. We just say that's just the economy. Well, no, the economy is how we distribute resources. And if we don't cap that, somebody can corner the market on something and charge obscene rates. And we just have to say, you know what? We should let the market compete. We should let values go. But what becomes abnormal are these economic aneurysms that are wealthy people. That's really, if I can't help but look at it as a physiologist. I am an animal physiologist by training. I try to understand how bodies work. And when you look at a human body or any other major vertebrate animal, they have circulatory systems and they distribute their nutrients. And the circulatory system and the digestive system and the urinary system are really the best, are just another form of a model of an economic system. That's how we distribute our resources. It's how we take in energy and fuel and material to build and repair the system. It's how we eliminate waste, the respiratory system, the circulatory system, all of those models. And if you think about blood flow, if it's a closed system, which is the idea here, for a civilization, all we can do is manage what we can manage. And an economy means we only have access to so many resources. How do we distribute them within that closed loop? And if you're healthy, every portion of the body is getting good blood flow and is getting supplied with nutrients to do growth and repair, and wastes are being removed and returned to the environment and however they're being processed. And when you do that as an individual, it's okay to, as long as you've got your flush toilet to eliminate waste and you can go to the market or have it delivered, you can get new food and you've got a place to live, then you can think rationally and be a good citizen and do some work and earn some income and have some options to do life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That's what we all want, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That's the American dream. But if I don't have enough resources, if I'm too stressed to have to work some more, I need to get to the point where I have resources. Well, how are we going to generate more resources? We're going to put a cap on the top. That's the coming revolution. The one percenters were right. Occupy Wall Street was right. And they've slammed those down. Those things have drifted away. You don't hear about them anymore because the people with power The last thing they want to hear is any talk about limits. They want us to talk about God and infinity and all of these things that could just say, oh, this is a beautiful way to run the world. We're on top of the pyramids. We get to be the rich and famous. And you bastards get to fight over the crumbs. Just fuck everybody else. And we could stop it. We could stop it so easily by just saying one new rule. We're going to cap wealth. We're going to say you can have $10 million in wealth or $100 million in wealth or something. But people have ridiculous numbers. We're paying pro athletes hundreds of millions of dollars. You know, the stars are getting all this money. And everybody, oh, it's the free market. We don't want to shut down capitalism. We don't want communism or socialism. No, we just want functional capitalism. We want democratic. We want capitalist democracy. We want to put capitalism under the reign of democracy and say enough's enough. That is too much. We put limits on things. We say you can't pollute. We say we can't speed. You say you can't beat your children. You can't beat your wife or your spouse. You know, you can't hit somebody. We put limits on all sorts of things. It's time to put a limit on the economy and say personal wealth needs to be capped. And we'll expand it when we can feed everybody and we can house everybody, because what will happen with that blood flow? If I clamp down that aneurysm, if I go in surgically and I cut that aneurysm out, I block it up, I sew up that vessel, then I'm no longer having a whole mass of blood and resources diverted out of the main circulation. It has to go back in through the system, and the system will adapt and develop and will distribute things to where they need to go. And they will no longer go into that blind alley of an aneurysm that is excessive wealth, that are these rich people who do nothing but buy politicians and push to have the rules changed however they think that is best. And if we're going to have democracy, all we can do is think about the rules and say, hey, what are we voting on? Because we shouldn't be voting on people. That's where we need to move to. Capitalism, when we vote on this stuff in democracy, if we're going to vote on everything, vote on the economy. We should vote on the economy and say, hey, it's not distributed well. It's not working. And one way to get more money into the economy is to just put a cap on the top of it and say, that's it. You can't make more than $10 million. Tell me ethically, while people are starving, why anybody should be making more than $10 million a year. I think that's at least a starting point. And I think we could at least agree to that if we're civilized. And if you're not, if you're somebody like the orange parasite, you know what? We're just coming for you. And the people who are rational and reasonable and want a civilization that they can work with are gonna eventually catch on that we need to clip their wings and shut it down. Oh, that was fun. This is Dr. Gene Mesko and Mostly Hairless Apes signing off. And I'll talk to you guys again next week.